and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It's still quarantine, but at least it's Friday. And that means a few things. It means tomorrow's Saturday, but it also means that we've got the host of the Happy Half Hour. Brederick, how's it going?
Oh, good. I'm good. I'm really excited about today's show. I'm not excited about when you framed me. I was leaned back in my chair in a very resigned to the universe posture. So I was waiting until you had like a good like me set before me. No, go to the two shot so I can like still respect your concepts. All right.
Thank you.
And again, as I told John, we got to stop wearing the same color shirt because it again looks like the two person.
Bink. That's not even. No.
Back
no,
five.
The other.
Back five.
Bink.
Too proud. I'm too proud to change.
We are too proud, yeah. There's an awesome piece of fan art that I got to put on Instagram of us wearing the same shirt. But anyway, very glad to have you on. Who do we have on the Happy Half Hour later on today?
Craig Lowry will be joining us for a Happy Half Hour that happened against all odds. We had a lot of technical issues that did not resolve themselves until like 40 minutes after we were supposed to start. But we did put together a full episode for you with Craig Lowry. So today,
awesome.
What you have to do as people is to watch the main the conversation. No, I don't think there's one today. So watch the main show, post game, Happy Half Hour. And then after that is Common Room at 6 p.m. with myself, my wife, the Brooke Marks. Also, J.R. Jackson will be joining us. And in addition to that, former TYT intern Ariana Vega on. It'll be great.
On the Common Room?
On the Common
Room.
Wow,
what a throwback. That's
throwback.
Awesome.
She didn't want to do it because she broke up with her boyfriend or something.
Oh,
and
sad.
She's like, ah, he's moving
no,
out.
That's
I
what
was
you
like,
need Common Room for.
Nah, well, yeah, that's I was fun. Like, I was like, my dad died 20 years ago today. I'm going to be weird. You'll enjoy that, everybody. Just watch Brett try to keep it together. And so we'll be messes on the Common Room.
Exactly.
Maybe there will be some existential talk. And then afterwards, we're going to host on Twitch, twitch.tv/artesianbuilds. That's who we're going to host. Artesian Builds putting together a computer to replace the one I had that got fried in a power surge.
Wow.
So you get to watch them put it together, which will be very cool, just like Henry Cavill putting together his computer.
Awesome.
And you also in the about section of Twitch right now is a code so you can get a discount on your build yourself. They have PC starting at $654.
Awesome. Cool. And that'll be used. Oh, get a surge protector, by the way. That'll be awesome.
I have one from the office. It did nothing.
Oh, okay. By the way, for everyone watching this, if you've thought about becoming an intern here at TYT, understand that if you do, we will never allow you to fully leave. You'll come back for shows. Dan Evans was on the on TDR recently. Our intern Sophie is now a producer on the show after being away at school and everything. Once we have you, we never quit you.
Yeah,
anyway,
and we make you do all kinds of weird stuff if you agree to it, which, like,
exactly.
Alyssa Bernardino, our current intern, was on the show as well.
Exactly, that's awesome. Okay, we've got lots of news that we're going to get to. There's way too much, but we're going to try. I did want to quickly announce, before we launch into our other stories, that in a week of lots of progressives winning awesome races, including Cori Bush and Rashida won re-election, and Ilhan's about to, we also have Marquita Bradshaw, who won her Tennessee Democratic Senate primary race. She's an environmentalist endorsed by the DSA. And here's what's so amazing about it. She beat the sort of DSCC-backed candidate James Mackler, who raised about $2.1 million. That was the DSCC candidate. Do you know how much she raised? From the research that's been done, $8,000. And she beat the multi-million dollar candidacy. That's awesome. And so I want to thank Jessica Chastain for messaging me about the win and letting me know about that. We'd had a super chat earlier this week telling us to watch out for Marquita Bradshaw's race. And boom. Amazing.
And John didn't believe, but I believed.
I didn't not believe.
John, it seems like John's admitting to not believing. I haven't admitted to that.
I don't think that's true. Okay, so because this is looking like it's going to be an hour and a half long show, we better get into it. In a presidential race that is already being framed around mental competence and how much you've got it together mentally, Trump appears to be having a little bit of trouble in some of his recent speeches. Let's start off with the lightest example of this. Here is one of his weird Twitter quirks suddenly turning into a speech thing.
On the question of foreign trade, previous leaders were guided by a shameful policy of capitulation, submission, and retreat. For decades, you watched as politicians let foreign nations steal our jobs, loot our factories, and plunder the crown jewels of the U.S. economy. And the word plunder is capitalized.
Like, in the speech, was it capitalized? Or are you saying like, historically, metaphorically, it's capitalized? Like, I know you capitalize stuff randomly. Does he think that that's a physical constant of the universe?
That's worse than when people go, air quote, or slash, like, what are you doing? No, your line read was perfect. I could tell in your mm-hmm. delivery that it was capitalized.
Yeah, and plundering, that's how you auditorily capitalize something. You don't, I wish I could know
and
if
also
he's just saying that, or was it literally capitalized? And then he read it capitalized, like the classic Hercules disappointed line where, like, he reveals things about the script you're not supposed to.
I mean, there's so much to just dive in, to dig around and speculate about, but it's very probable to me that his speechwriters have started reflecting his strange German noun capitalization. I guess that's a participle, but, like, his weird pronunciation in his speech writing. And when he sees it, he just reveals what an idiot he is, where he's like, oh, when I write that something in something with a capital letter, I need that people know it's emphasized, but I want you to know. Exactly. And also his reading voice is so boring that
it's gotten more boring, I would say, in the past, like, 6 months or so, past few months.
How mad are white nationalists about the fact that behind him it's in, like, French and, like, Spanish?
Yeah, he shouldn't abide by that. Okay, so we do have more, though, because it's not just the plundering. That's, like, a weird quirk. But now we just have things that people are struggling to understand what actually happened here. Here's an example.
Shifting production to Thailand and to Vietnam. Thailand and Vietnam, two places that I like their leaders very much. They're very nice to us. Do they take advantage of the United States?
I like their leaders. Their leaders are thick and juicy.
Dark meat of leaders, really.
So,
as opposed to the breast meat of leaders like you have in other countries.
Oh, my God. So he just read it like he has no idea what the speech is about or what it says, and so he's reading it for the first time, and without that ability, that weird thing that I've mentioned multiple times, I think is kind of a skill of mine, where I can generally just launch into a graphic without knowing what's on it and read words ahead so that it makes sense. He can't
weirdest
read
flex, John has. John
I know
has.
It's the weirdest.
Not the first time he said it. It's just the
I acknowledge
strangest,
that. I acknowledge that.
Flex.
I acknowledge that. Anyway,
I can cold read graphics, not to
I
brag.
Can. My cold read, pretty hot. Anyway, he can't do that even halfway through a word. He can't preview visually.
He knew it. The best part is he's like, oh, Vietnam, got it. That was Thailand. That was Thailand. I'm going to go back. Did you see the Dinesh D'Souza's response to all that?
He tried to explain how right Trump was, as if Trump hadn't already corrected himself seconds later.
D'Souza full-on Kevin Costner bodyguards himself, like, no!
Yeah.
In front of Trump.
Jumping in front of a bullet. Yeah,
the
Simpsons
has
a great.
Like, the best, he's like, well, colonially, I don't know, I didn't read it, but JR mentioned it in the morning meeting. Apparently he goes, like, colonially, that was how the colonists, the British imperialists pronounced it. And it's an Asher who lived in Thailand goes, Thailand was never colonized.
But okay, so two amazing things there. One, I never knew that Asher lived in Thailand. Thailand. That's awesome. The second is, even if that was right, and apparently it's not true, I'm not an expert, even if it was right, that's not what Trump was doing. Trump made
absolutely
a mistake and fixed it.
Actually, in Shakespeare, Don Juan is pronounced Don Juan, therefore Thailand. Nope.
That wasn't the only geographical little flub that he had recently. Here's a fun one.
When they gaze upon Yosemites,
towering sequoias.
He got sequoias.
Yo, Semites, I'm pro-Israel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to Trump's, like, Sammy Davis Jr., like, urban Jewish crossover bit. Yo, Semites. Reaching to the young youth, young black Jewish youth.
Jesus. Yeah, it's the same exact thing. He doesn't prepare. He doesn't have any sort of, I don't know what the term would be, some sort of script reading court vision. Like, he doesn't have any of that. And the thing is, like, when you combine it with the plunder and the boring read, it's that I don't think he was doing a ton of this before. There were all sorts of weird things about his scripts before, his speeches before. But now it seems like he's got senioritis. Like, he's just sort of, like mailing it in at this point.
He doesn't do homework, and it's so infuriating. I saw a great tweet the other day about, like, why we shouldn't send kids back to school. It's very obvious that Trump never learned a single thing in school. So you could be president someday if you skip eighth.
Exactly. Donald Trump has decided to pivot on Joe Biden and the campaign to religion and guns. And here's how he expressed that sort of a standard Republican narrative.
Because he's going to double and triple your taxes. He's going to do things that nobody ever would ever think even possible. Because he's following the radical left agenda. Take away your guns. Destroy your Second Amendment. No religion, no anything. Hurt the Bible, hurt God. He's against God, he's against guns, he's against energy, our kind of energy. You know, I was in Texas the other day, I said, wait a minute, the other side is against guns, they're against oil and gas, they're against religion, Bible, God. How's he going to win Texas?
Guns, inside his gas, mind is Bible. The, inside his mind is like Charlie in the sunny, like, he's got a bunch of like God, we just referenced Bible, that on Monday. I was just like, here's where it goes.
Pepe this Sylvia.
You got the Bible and the guns.
Yeah. Yeah. He's against lamp. and I know it's so, like, to people who aren't dwelling in all of that, it's so weird that you can just throw out all of these seemingly disconnected nouns, gas, guns, God. It's like, wait, why are those things tied? Why is being for God mean that you have to, like, lust constantly over guns? What does that have to do with anything? But he gets his audience. I think that was in Texas. But he's going to hurt God. No religion. That Joe Biden is going to ban religion in America? That's obviously insane. It doesn't need to be said that it's insane. But is that convincing anyone? Is that effective? Is that going to swing some people to supporting Trump rather than Biden?
Well, especially, no. I mean, yes, here's why. Because there is a traditional sort of winning formula for Republicans when they run, and it is that. They don't do it that explicitly. They do a version of that. They start with a bulletin board that says God, guns, Battlestar Galactica, and it's all these related things that are part of the platform, and they just message relentlessly at it.
Yeah.
And I would say, if you had to make a choice, ideally you would just message effectively in a coherent way, but
ideally,
if I take a step back, and similar to how before the show no one heard this, but you asked me if I'd rather be a pirate reincarnated or something random. If I had to choose between these two worlds where I either message in complete sentences that aren't really connected or affected,
yeah,
or I just message in a word cloud vomit of Republican talking points categories, I would rather my candidate message in a word vomit talking point category cloud.
Yeah.
And that's what Trump does. And when he's reading his stupid speeches and not caring about it, he is interpreting these messages the way most people interpret political speeches, just like blah, 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 nothing, nothing. But when he takes a step back and just goes, Biden's after your guns, getting back to the original question you asked, if he is messaging that way and not making people think COVID failure, disinfectant, death, and now Dilbert is what Peter Navarro wants you to pay attention to. The Dilbert guy, his medical advice. Then, maybe. Then that's how they can try to get back on track and win.
I get that, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because there was, I forget exactly what the attempted pivot was a few weeks ago, but it was pretty clear that's what it was, and we have to be aware of that. I don't think that we at TYT are likely to forget that there's a pandemic and an economic collapse, but the media is always looking for drama, and a race which is month after month Biden looks maybe inevitable is boring. And so, yeah, we do have to be aware of that possibility. Now, I do want to give Biden a chance to respond, because he's being declared by Trump to be, I would assume, the most viciously aggressive anti-religion politician America's ever seen, which seems like a stretch. Biden, who was the country's first Catholic vice president, would be the first Catholic president in more than half a century, has been motivated by his faith throughout his long career in politics. Biden almost always has rosary beads in his pocket and frequently holds them in his hand, including while he monitored the raid that killed Osama bin Laden in 2011. Now, we can take issue with whether that makes sense, but he was doing it. He has written and spoken at length about how faith helped him grieve the loss of his first wife, daughter, many years ago, and his son, Beau, more recently. He called Trump's attack shameful, saying that his faith is the bedrock foundation of his life. Now, look, I think America needs far more totally secular politicians, but you can't say that Biden's not religious.
Oh yeah. In a recent ad from the Trump campaign, they pulled together a bunch of photos to make it look like Biden was doing nothing and like sitting and cowering in a basement, when in one situation you can like see someone else's knee like in the photo. But one of the photos that they took was supposed to be Biden tired on a chair, when in reality, he was praying at a church. Like, that was the photo taken. And so if I have to get through, I mean, the problem is he's Catholic, to be honest, because there is this weird like Catholic Christian divide that Kennedy, if you say like he would be the first Catholic in over a half century, like Kennedy, I believe, was the last Catholic president, first and most recent Catholic president. It is not like cut and dry that the Christians would go along with that.
Yeah.
Like the other Christians would go along with that. But come on, you're not going to, you can't convince people of a couple things. You can't convince people that Biden is against working class Americans. You just can't, especially in Michigan, where he, quote, saved the auto industry. And these are messaging things, not like reality.
Yeah.
You can't convince him of that. You can't convince him that he ain't working class Joe. You can't convince people that Joe Biden isn't religious. Like, he just is.
Yeah.
He's a cat. He's a good old Catholic boy from Scranton.
Yeah, I think that, look, I think in theory you could convince them that what Biden would actually do for working class Americans isn't what they need if you were to run against him from the left, but Trump obviously isn't going to do that, and if he tries to, it's going to be a complete sham.
Yeah.
You
just need three debates of Biden like he was in the last debate with Bernie.
Mm-hmm. To just sort of hold the line, yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Larry Kudlow is obviously incredibly important in terms of advising Donald Trump on the economy, and that advice is incredibly important right now because we're in a very rocky time indeed in terms of employment and the need for stimulus. So the issue with him having that position is that he is frequently wrong and doesn't seem to learn from his mistakes. So I want to show you a video that was put together by The Recount that shows Larry Kudlow talking about the coronavirus pandemic at the very beginning of it, and how first you're going to see him opining on what he had said, and then you're going to see the actual comments. So let's take a look at that mashup.
I was asked again on February 25th. I said we were airtight. On February 25th, there were fewer than 20 cases. I didn't say we will be. I didn't say it was a forecast. I just said at this point, there were fewer than 20 cases.
We have contained this. I won't say airtight, but pretty close to airtight.
So I didn't say that it wouldn't get out of... No, but that's what airtight means, is that it won't get out. Obviously, there weren't a lot of cases then. The fear is that it would spread, and you were saying airtight.
Wait, weren't his words... I'm not going to say airtight, but it is as
pretty
tight
close to
as you can be not letting air in or out. I'm not going to say airtight.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my corners of my face are melting.
Exactly. And so, look, I intro'd this story with the economy. So why? I mean, there he's just talking about the pandemic. It's because this messaging was not just deceptive in terms of giving people a false sense of security on the eve of a pandemic, but also was clearly designed to benefit the market, to stop people from panicking and all of that, which I sort of get the impulse for that. But if it is going to ravage our country, and if that is going to hurt the economy, then don't we kind of need to know that?
Yes, but that's not his job. So here's the thing that Larry Kudlow does understand, is for all the talk about how awesome America's economy is and how Gordon Gekko, everybody on Wall Street, is when greed is good, they are little skittish cockroach wimps. And any crack of light from the outside world of reality that makes its way into the rooms on the trading floors scares the hell out of them. And it is his job to throw his body up against that door and hold it and not let reality in so that they all can know two things. One, it's not that bad. The only reason anything could shut down is because we're going to make sure that it all goes away. But also, even if it does shut down, while we will quibble and fight and claw not to give Americans like $120 extra dollars a week, we will not blink twice. We will not think twice about or bat an eye about giving a bajillion dollars to those Wall Street cockroaches.
Because that's the part of the economy we actually care about. So the comments we showed you were from the 25th, I believe it was, of February. So what was he saying on the 28th when he headed to CPAC? Well, here is what he had to say. And again, these are very clear predictions, not just about what is happening, like a description. These are predictions of what's going to happen.
Since I believe and Ivanka believes that the country is in good, safe hands right now, you might think about buying the dip. You might think about buying the dip. Now, let me segue and switch gears just a little bit. The virus is not going to sink the American economy. What is or could sink the American economy is the socialism coming from our friends on the other side of the aisle. That's the biggest fear that I have.
Socialism killed about 40 million jobs and 160,000 people. Oh, wait, no, that was something else. Those were very clear predictions with a call to action. It's not going to hurt the economy. You should buy the dip. You should be investing now. That's what he was telling people on the 28th of February.
Oh, well, I do think that by and large, people should buy the dip. I think that's the right thing.
Yes, assuming that is the bottom of the dip. Hypothetically, if it falls down a lot more, that could be bad advice. But I get what you're saying.
Right, depending on, but talking to a room full of capitalists who are, you know, using funds, Anyways, but yeah, he's an idiot. He needs all he's missing is like pom poms and a ghost state like shirt. And then also like socialism, like what is he talking about? What socialist instincts are we speaking about? Bernie Sanders has a proposal to institute a wealth tax saying that of people who did buy the dip, what they recouped since then. And I think the whole reason for the bill is just to show people how little it would take to fund stuff.
Yeah.
And if you just tax the people with these huge gains since the dip, that's all the money you need for these scary social programs.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's it's very frustrating. And then also to say like these socialists, Trump is asking for a portion of the sale of TikTok. I am fine personally in weird capitalist ways of like for him telling China like, oh, you're going to keep our companies out of your state. Well, then we're going to keep your companies out of my state. That's fine. But then to say that I, the government, want a cut of a sale of a private business. And then at the same time say that like these socialist big government tax dollar initiatives are so crazy and invasive to the capitalist process. That is utter hypocrisy right there in that tiny little bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, the idea that social and it's CPAC. You just say socialism. Yeah. It's an applause line. That's all. You don't need to know what it is. The audience certainly doesn't. Look, it's one thing to show here is how wrong Larry Kudlow has been. And just recently, we're not even going back, you know, years and all of the terrible predictions that you are allowed to get fundamentally wrong in a way that is hurtful, incredibly hurtful to the economy, people's lives, all of that. It doesn't matter in D.C. You're going to be just fine. It's that he continues to be wrong. And so Larry Kudlow recently, the reason we're talking about him is that he and Steve Mnuchin and Navarro, they are like the three head guys on the people don't deserve enhanced unemployment benefits anymore because it's going to stop them from going back to work. And they will keep saying that regardless of how many studies come out that it isn't true. Now, thankfully, Poppy Harlow was interviewing Larry Kudlow, and she actually called him out on this particular thing as he continued to advance that false narrative.
I think it's a disincentive for people to go back to work. What evidence do you have?
Well, look, what evidence? Yeah. I mean, the University of Chicago said 2/3 of the people now have higher unemployment benefits than their wage. Another piece of evidence.
But Larry, the University of Chicago survey doesn't conclude what you're arguing. I talked to the author of the study last night, and he told me, but their study doesn't conclude that. I talked to one of the economists who wrote the study last night, and he said to me, that's a mistake. It's a mistake to draw the conclusion, as you have been in the White House has been, that right now it's a disincentive to go back to work. It tells you about the dollars. It doesn't tell you what the dollars do. And the Yale study said exactly the same thing.
Well, look, whoever that chap is, he or she
His name is Professor Peter Gagnon. And I think you've read the study, right?
Well, I've seen the
work. Okay, well, damn, right there he says, I've seen the work. That means he hasn't read the study, and he doesn't know who did it, and he doesn't really care because he's just making sort of loose... He believes he can just say, there's a study, and it agrees with me, even though it doesn't. It shows that some people are making more. It does not conclude that that is affecting their behavior in the way they're saying. And he keeps pointing to the fact that it shows that they have the money, and just assuming, oh, so everything else I say must be true. It's not. And that is potentially affecting the Senate negotiations that are going on right now. It might potentially affect the actual money that will end up going to countless millions of workers potentially for months. This is one of the most important things that needs to be clear, that people need to be understand at this point. And he's doing everything he can to convince people of something that's untrue for a very easy to understand reason. They don't want people getting the money. They think of it as their money, not taxpayer dollars that all these workers have paid in and now will be drawing from. They think of it as theirs. And they don't like the idea, philosophically, fundamentally, ideologically, they don't like the idea of workers making more money. They just don't.
Yeah, yes. Implied in his argument is, well, implied in the study from Yale is that he won. That instinct that he thinks that he wants all Americans to have, which is, I don't want to sit there and suck off the government teat. I want to work and earn my money. That is accurate. That portrayal of the American worker is accurate according to the Yale study that says people are not, by and large, those who are receiving more in unemployment benefits, the Yale study says, are not staying home when facing the opportunity to work. That's true. So, and also implied in his model is that just, I think he thinks that any general economic conclusion that they teach you in economics class will hold and should hold. It should be that we should set up incentives so people go and contribute to the economy versus taking from the economy. But if he's worried about weird incentives, he should look at the other side of the equation, not the worker who is going to get 100 extra bucks a week, but rather the speculators in the capital markets who are using every opportunity to make these crazy bets. And when they lose, they get bailed out. Mm-hmm. They get bailed out. And so what we should look back and say is, like, why we are only incentivizing the Wall Street speculators to go out there and fail, because they're the ones who are going to get bailed out by the government. Instead, he wants to, as they always do, blame it on working class Americans who he has no studies proving that they're doing what he says they're doing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it's just like last week, I think it was my garbage person of the week was basically our government for going on this long recess without actually coming to a deal, and then coming back Monday at 2 and saying, oh, no, we're surely going to have one now. And look, there's a lot of pressure to get something done. So by Friday, definitely. No, they just went on another long vacation.
Yeah, Trump went to Virginia or went to some three-day golf excursion.
They're gone. Still garbage. They're not going to be my garbage person this week, but they're still garbage.
And not just that, like also when last point is like when Kudlow says, I haven't seen the work. I've seen the work. And also Hassett, the other economic advisor, is like, I haven't played with the numbers. It's all a game to them.
Yeah.
They're just like, I'm going to sit around and toy with this stuff. If they don't take it seriously.
Yeah, they don't.
Very frustrating.
They don't. Joe Biden. Who is he? You may think you know, because he's been in politics for 400 years, like Melisandre. But there's still a chance that the right can recraft the narrative of who he is. And they've gone an interesting, although kind of predictable, direction. So Trump is saying he's going to ban everything, guns, religion, he's going to triple your taxes. Kind of doubt that's going to happen. And now the right-wing media, including Fox News, are picking up on this line. So Laura Ingraham, this is a shot from yesterday that Jason Campbell posted on Twitter that has his socialist wish list to empty out the prisons, single-payer healthcare, government-paid childcare, the Green New Deal, guaranteed basic income, and of course, because it's Fox and she's a white supremacist, he's guaranteeing reparations as well. Who is Joseph Biden? He's doing those things? That doesn't seem right,
Brad. Bill Joe. Crime Bill Joe is going to empty out the prisons. It's true. They are portraying him as both sleepy Joe Biden and like Castro at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And Mao Zedong. Like, that is what Joe Biden is. And they're just going to talk. And every time they talk, all I have to say is the economy is in shambles. And while everyone reasonable is trying to help, all the people on Fox News and in the White House, well, some of the people in the White House, as opposed to the ones that are leaking the true tale of chaos that's happening behind the scenes, everybody in the White House is trying to tell you to follow the following people. Not Dr. Fauci, but Donald Trump, who said we should look into putting disinfectant into your veins, who said that we should shine ultraviolet light into your veins, that is clawing about to try to shove hydroxychloroquine down your throat, and then says we really needed to give a voice to the demon semen doctor. Yeah. And then yesterday, Peter Navarro said the biggest and most important influence on how we make decisions in America is the guy who drew Dilbert cartoons. That's them. And this is us.
Yeah. Hopefully there's more of us when it comes to the election, but yeah, you're totally right. The demon, like, what he just retweeted the demon semen one, and I'm sure he didn't think a second about it. But then even once it was revealed that she is in the running for craziest person in America, they didn't back off. Like, there's no, like, even that sort of, that's not even accountability, but even that doesn't exist. And so, look, we knew, how many times did we say to the election, doesn't matter who they who we nominate, they're going to be presented as Mao. And so, socialist wish list. I look at that and I think, yes. The first reply to it that I saw was, it was the Kylo Ren more gif. Which, yeah. And Laura, like, as I know you watch the show, he is having trouble energizing younger voters, more progressive voters, for obvious reasons. We're not thrilled with his platform in a number of different ways. That's what we want. We want that. Convince us. Please convince us that he will actually do that. That would be awesome. I kind of doubt it. Yeah, no, God, so you can't just make up stuff.
Like, you can't.
When Trump can. Was going to be the nominee, I guess you can. When Trump was going to be the nominee, we talked about the quotes he said, like he wants to carpet bomb people, he wants to bring back waterboarding and stuff like that. We would respond to the things he said. We didn't just make up crazy stuff like he'd lie about the path of a hurricane or he'd want to buy Greenland or something like that. All of that came true, but we didn't make it up at the time.
Puerto Rico.
Sell Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. Like, we went to war with the army we've got, not the army we want. That's what we did. But they don't have to do that in right-wing media. Brett and I are two idiots on YouTube.
Not me, I'm not.
Our business cards. And we hold ourselves to far higher standards of accountability than Laura Ingraham does.
That's the thing, is it's almost too easy. All you have to do as a news organization is not journalism. That's it. That's all they discovered. Here's what's weird, is you look at any of, like, the newspaper. The newspaper has one, it's one half of sitting like this. Or I guess it's one whole page like this of opinions. It's the editorials, and it's the opposite editorials where they have people come in, the op-eds. That is the opinion in the newspaper, that one thing. And then maybe they have columnists who write about sports.
Yeah, yeah.
But on Fox News, their op-ed section is their bread and butter, and it exists on other networks as well. But what's very frustrating to me is that, like, as it became crystallized when Donald Trump said something on Fox and Friends, and they didn't push it back, and they just have been pushing it forward, actually, his lies about kids being immune to COVID-19. And then when he retweets that on Twitter and puts it on Facebook, that interaction from Fox News, a news channel.
Yeah.
That gets taken down because it does violate Twitter and Facebook's terms of service.
Yeah, exactly.
And those terms of service are only there so they don't get sued. So for Facebook and Twitter having a higher level, a higher standard than a thing called Fox News Channel is insane.
It's insane.
Tucker Carlson going on saying we still don't know how George Floyd died. Well, if he was alive before there was a knee on his back for 8 minutes and he was dead after that, I feel like I do know how he died.
Could be related. Yeah, exactly. Jesus, ridiculous. Joe Biden had one of his Bidenisms yesterday, and it had to do with the black community. We're going to show you the clip in just a second. And his apology, because he had to roll it back, in the wake of attacks by Donald Trump for the things that he said.
No, but most people don't know. Unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
No, don't do that. What?
Don't do that. That's the answer. The answer is don't do that.
Don't, man. Don't. I saw Ben Dixon tweeted in reply to the original video. He was like, someone who loves Joe Biden needs to take him and they need to bring him down to the basement. And they need to put so many locks on that door that it can't come out until after the election.
Yeah, but
and
that's where it's broadcasting from, by the way.
No! Look, so we're going to have his follow-up to that. It's not just that you didn't express your thought clearly. There's no good interpretation of that.
There is.
What?
The good interpretation is that, politically speaking, CNN, Fox News, Democratic analysts, they all think of the Latino voting bloc as one single bloc. And it is the dumbest thing you can. It's one of the dumbest things you can do. The only thing dumber is phrasing it the way that Joe Biden did. But that is a thing that is very real. And people as deep into the administration as Stephen Miller's wife is like, I don't know why we need Little Havana. It's like, do you know who's in Little Havana? People who fled Castro. Mm-hmm. So you do need that, especially in Florida, because the Latino vote in Florida, more so probably 30 years ago and less so now, but still in a huge, by a huge margin, votes in a way that is different than Californian immigrants of Latino heritage. Yes. But what you don't understand in that, especially to underscore what was stupid about Joe Biden's point, is within the Cuban immigrant community, there is racism of, you know, Afro-Cubans versus non versus like Spanish white Cubans. Mm-hmm. And so there are many needless things that he did. One of them is needlessly comparing the diversity of communities and saying that one of them just isn't. He did say, with certain notable exceptions, he is technically accurate that, as we are saying, sir, there are notable exceptions to the stupid thing you said. Mm-hmm. So, yes, technically you could parse what he said in a way that makes more sense. However, your job as a politician, which you've had since you were, 29 years old?
Yeah.
Is to not say things that way. Is to maybe understand the fundamental differences. Like, the, you know, black voters vote. There's like 9% vote Republican and 29% of Latino voters vote vote Republican or something like that. But within that are the exact diversity issues of like Afro, like black Latinos, that you're saying, you're implying in your wording are not really notable exceptions.
I know. It just, yeah, I don't know that I necessarily followed exactly, but you said technically you can parse it in a way that's doesn't work in politics, as you noted. You can't expect that people are going to technically parse something because they're not. It's just, yeah, every community is incredibly diverse. Don't imply that any community isn't diverse. Even if people who check a box as black vote overwhelmingly in one direction, that doesn't mean that they all do so for the same reasons, at the same exact rates. When broken down by age, there could be a lot of difference. Certain issues can be emphasized more. It's just, there's a million types of diversity, and it's just such a, don't.
And he's right that black people who are here due to slavery in America and its legacy don't get to say, I'm Cuban. They don't get to say, I'm Nigerian. I'm from Sierra Leone. I'm from all these different countries, because they don't know. That was robbed from so many Americans. They're literally like Washingtons and Jeffersons. And I'm saying that with an apostrophe. Like, they belong, like they were not able to be considered human beings. And that is a tragedy that implies a shared experience that through, you know, what is the American sin is still relevant today for a large portion of black people. However, dude, that's not how, when, why you say that.
Just don't.
I just pulled my earphones out because I'm so disappointed. But it's Joe Biden, man. Joe Biden. I said this on the show, on the main show yesterday, where it's like, he's the guy who said you can't go into, you know, jokingly, we're all friends here. You can't go, and I'm trying to appeal to South Asian people. You cannot go into a Dunkin' Donuts without a slight Indian accent. Like, he thought we were all being buds here. And that's Joe Biden. And it takes people with, you know, who grew up with white grandparents to be like, this is what they mean. They don't mean bad. You know what I mean?
I get, yeah, and he said, someone, I think Cat Tower in the comments reminded us, remember I think it was, you ain't black if you don't vote for me? No,
yeah.
Don't, no, stop.
Yeah, that's it. It's
who do you want to hear talk about race less, Trump or Biden? For very different reasons, possibly, or at least variations on reasons. I don't want to hear either of them ever talk about it.
Yeah.
God, these debates.
But like, yeah, I mean, I heard the extended version. Did you hear the extended version of what he said on the NPR clip?
Feel free. I'm going to give his update in a second. But what's the extended
version? The extended version was specifically what I was referencing. He's like, there's a difference, there's a difference between, you know, what we would classify as a Latino voter in Florida versus a Latino voter in Arizona. But as I also said on the show, like in the census, when people answer those questions on a census, it is itself confusing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you said it too, like when you check a box is black, but then there's like, it has been traditionally divided as like Latino white, Latino not white, mm-hmm. white, but it's all under white. It's
yeah, very strange. And you're combining some things that are sort of language dependent ancestries with some things that are social constructs that change over time with, yeah, no wonder people get confused. So anyway, let's get a little bit of his response. Oh, first the attacks. Donald Trump immediately launched into it because Donald Trump is not going to take someone saying something offensive about non-white Americans. Did you watch that clip? Joe Biden this morning, he totally disparaged and insulted the black community. What he said is incredible. I don't know what's going on with him, but it was a very insulting statement he made. I guess you'll figure this out. You'll see it in a little while. It was a great insult to the black community. And then he tweeted today, after yesterday's statement, sleepy Joe Biden is no longer worthy of the black vote. Wait, so he believes he was worthy before it? That doesn't make sense. Anyway, what Biden said in response to all of the criticism, which is very merited. Earlier today, I made some comments about diversity in the African-American and Latino communities that I want to clarify. In no way did I mean to suggest that the African-American community is a monolith, not by identity, not on issues, not at all. Throughout my career, I've witnessed the diversity of thought, background, and sentiment within the African-American community. It's this diversity that makes our workplaces, communities, and country a better place. It goes on to say, my commitment to you is this. I will always listen. I will never stop fighting for the African-American community, and I will never stop fighting for a more equitable future. So the real difference is, okay, his comments aren't as bad as Trump's, but you'll get follow-up comments that are good. That's the difference, I guess, is you'll still have the racial blunders and offensive statements and misunderstandings, but the follow-up will be PR approved rather than retweeting a QAnoner.
Right, exactly. Or a demon semen doctor. Like, come on. But and that's the thing is every time there's a statement like this, you get someone within Washington, too, saying, I've known Joe Biden for 50 years. He's a good guy. Mm-hmm.
Well, and in terms of you talked about earlier about trying to convince them that he's not, you know, like Rust Belt Joe or whatever. Some of this is baked in and it's going to be hard for them to move. So there was just a poll. Let's take a look at this. Question is, do you think each of the following is biased against black people? So for Donald Trump, the yes is biased is 87% of the population. For Joe Biden, it's 17% of the population. That's among the black community. Among U.S. adults, it's 57% for Donald Trump because of source. Of course, some white conservatives aren't going to agree to that, even though they know it. And in fact, they want it. And 31% of the population at large says that Joe Biden is. So big gaps there. And amongst black Americans, massive gaps. Not to say that it can't change and that even a couple points change might not matter, but that's going to be a little bit more difficult one when you have a politician that's been around for literally decades. That comes with a lot of bad baggage, but it also comes with sort of baked in opinions baggage, some of it not negative.
Yep, with you.
It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. I love to watch him walk away with the can. Anyway, so Brett and I both have garbage people chosen. Mine was actually fairly easy this week, although I would not expect that anyone would have been able to predict it. It is the North Paulding High School. Or at least its leadership, not the building or the people, but the people in charge. So I'm going to put them on here. And by the way, I accidentally printed on very high quality parchment paper. So anyway, they're going to be very high quality trash. You know why? We need to go back a few days to find out why. And it starts with Hannah Waters, a 15-year-old. Who cares about the world and is going to fight to make it better. So she tweeted, day two at North Paulding High School is just as bad. We were stopped because it was jammed. We were close enough to the point where I got pushed multiple times to go to second block. This is not okay, not to mention the 10% mask rate. And it's a photo of absolutely packed hallways, which is not in any way safe. Those kids are being exposed potentially to coronavirus. Multiple schools have already had outbreaks. And she continued to document this, including, and I love this, breaking down the percent compliance with mask rules in each of her blocks on multiple days, which is absolutely awesome. This is what we want, is, you know, someone like Hannah who is going to, like, know what's going on in the world and care about it and document what's wrong, make it public to try to make a change. And there was a change as a result of Hannah's work. In an interview with BuzzFeed News, she said that she was suspended after the photo was shared by Twitter accounts with large followings and went viral. She says, "I used my phone in the hallway without permission, used my phone for social media, and posting pictures of minors without consent. That was the reason she was told for her suspension," which I guess is technically true, but I think we get the real reason is it makes the leadership of North Paulding look really bad, and they don't like that. So they suspended her. So now, they did, after this became a big blow-up story, reverse the suspension, but we know what they were thinking and why they did it, and that's why they're in the can.
Yes, absolutely. This is the kind of stuff where this is all incentivized. This kind of behavior is incentivized by Donald Trump, because everything he's doing is trying to, at the same time as he is levying these sanctions against Carrie Lam in Hong Kong for doing what the Chinese government wants and taking away people's freedoms and suppressing information and people's ability to express themselves. That is exactly what this Georgia high school is doing at the not even quite a little more than implied behest of the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Removing the ability of reporting things from the CDC, calling everyone who says stuff that is based in fact fake news, all the way down to his own top epidemiologist. This is that. This is leadership in action. Mm-hmm. And yes, people are always going to want to like cover up their mistakes and things that make them embarrassed. But like, to this extent, when people's lives are at stake, usually that just happens at schools and it's just molesting kids, right?
Yeah.
They cover it up, you know what I mean? That's terrible too. But like, this is kids are gonna die. That's where I would put it in the category with something embarrassing happened at your school, and you just like let's do what we can to punish the kid for doing something they absolutely should do, which should be fundamentally what we're teaching kids to do in school anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to imagine that meeting where they're like, "Oh my God, we're getting reamed online. This is a PR disaster. What should we do?" Well, we could strike back and make a martyr of her. I guess we could do that. Good call. And this is where people go to learn. So I want to show you one more thing, just because in addition to the photos and the documentation, we also have some video that was made available. And so I'm going to show you that. It's great work here. Look at that. Imagine walking around this. Now, a good number of the students are wearing masks, but tons aren't. And they are very, very close packed together. And think about traveling down that hallway, how scared you would be that you're going to get a virus that might not kill you, maybe, but you might spread it to someone else. You might. And I want to read.
Things.
No, continue.
I just like when I was a kid, I was afraid. I went home from school once. I was on like second lunch, so we could leave. But I left and drove home because I was convinced through some weird neurotic paranoia that the earth decided it was going to hurl toward the sun. Like, I was freaked out about an irrational fear. I'm also terrified that I would die from a meteorite and the Yellowstone supervolcano. These are very unreal fears.
Yes.
That drove me into real panics when I was in high school.
Yeah.
The idea that I'm being forced to go to school amid a pandemic that is killing people and could result in the deaths of my not so elderly family members, not alone myself. I cannot imagine the kind, not to mention also kids also having to be afraid that a school shooter is going to come and show up.
Yeah.
How difficult it must be for kids right now. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I can't. And so she and all of them are dealing with that fear. She is dealing with the fact that she was suspended because of this. And I saw someone mention in the comments, it's a great point, like, all of those kids that aren't wearing masks, do you think they want to wear masks? How do you think they will respond to one of their fellow students pointing out how irresponsible all this is and putting pressure on them to wear masks? She's going to face strike back, social strike back from her peers at school, but she still did it. And the reason that she gave for why she did it, I absolutely love. She said, "My mom has always told me that she won't get mad at us if we get in trouble as long as it's good trouble." Citing John Lewis. Like, That kills me. We have the can for bad people. We've been talking for a long time about having something for the good people. I guess I can honorarily induct her to Dragon Squad. That's about all I can offer at this point. But Hannah Waters, like, no, we need a million. We need 10 million Hannah Waters, people who actually care, who have social responsibility, and will suffer for it to try to push the country in the right direction. Great work there, but not for North Paulding's principle. You're trash.
Yes. My garbage person is the people who put together a fundraiser for the U.S. Navy SEALs at a Navy museum. They wanted to demonstrate the effectiveness of their attack dogs. And to do so, they decided they would put a Colin Kaepernick jersey on one of the demonstrators. Under that, he had some protective gear, and they just decided to sick the dogs on him. Here is the image they decided to put forth at this fundraiser. Take a look.
Here comes Raven. Raven is the museum mascot. All right, Josh, he's going to probably get another dog. Here we go. Here comes Callie. Callie's the oldest dog in the field, 9 years old. Josh's going to pick another one. Maybe, maybe not. Here we go. Here comes Storm, young buck on the field. All right. Here we go. Can Josh take more? Here comes Oplon. Smash them. I've seen Josh with 12 dogs at one time.
Good job, guys. I mean,
who,
I
who's
can't,
the group again?
It is a Navy SEAL museum event where they had essentially this group come to do a demonstration.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're Navy SEALs involved. They're Navy SEALs there. This is in a demonstration. A target is seen wearing a this is their statement from the Navy SEALs. We became aware today of this whole thing. From a Navy SEAL museum event posted last year with a military working dog demonstration. The target's wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey. The inherent message of this video is completely inconsistent. We're investigating the matter fully. Initial investigations are that there were no active duty Navy personnel or equipment involved in this independent organization's event. But, and we have another video I want to show just to show you the crowd's reaction. And so there's that. In that category, which we need a term for, of things I can't believe I have to say, Colin Kaepernick is not protesting the troops. In fact, the idea to kneel was given to him by a Navy SEAL by a Army Green Beret after a conversation about how not to be disrespectful of the troops and the banner. That was the compromise that they came to after a dialogue. But a dialogue is not something anyone at this event is interested in. They're laughing. They decide. I mean, it's weird enough to show these dogs at work. And I have been in close contact with an attack dog used by the military, and it is horrifying.
Yeah.
Like this, the guy that handled the dog said, we need to end this demonstration now because he hasn't killed anything yet. And it's been a while. Like,
oh, I remember that. Yeah.
It is a very intense thing to see. And they're just, they are having very explicitly this dog attack, essentially Colin Kaepernick, someone who is trying to be patriotic and hold America to the promises it itself has made.
Yeah.
And the way they respond to that is, let's attack him with many dogs, and that's just not okay. So they are total garbage, as is the – it seems there's no active duty military people involved. Come on. They're wearing fatigues. It is at your place.
They have guns.
How could you allow – they have guns. How could you allow this to happen? That's
exactly.
That's not okay. It's
absolute garbage. I mean – and I guess if you're in the audience, maybe there's nothing you could do, but like you're okay with that?
Yeah. Say
and,
something.
And the people, yeah. When was this? Was in the last like week or something?
This was posted in the last week of an event last year.
Okay. Okay. Good. So last year. Yeah. So the people who were doing this last year, if they were holding this event in the 60s or, you know, earlier, what would they have been doing then? Like, they'll do what they think they can get away with because they hate these people and they want to, you know, figuratively kill them. And this is what they think they can get away with. But we know it's the same motivation. Man, garbage, utter garbage.
Yep. Okay. And now, can you go to graphic E9? Graphic E, as in Edward. Not, well, normally this block is the E block.
It is normally, yes. We
so
had
that's
a
what
lot.
Happened.
Okay, here we go.
All right, everybody, you need to go vote for which movie you want to watch with John and his wife this Saturday for movie night, tyt.com/polls/watch party to see if you want to watch The Circle, which is Social Network Gone Wild with Hanks and Hermione, Casino Royale, Secret Agent, Public Viewing, Cable Guy, I'm on Steven's team, or Knives Out, Murder Mystery with Ana de Armas and Captain de America.
It's quite good. All of those are winners. I can't wait to see who's going to end up being chosen. I'm on the edge of my seat.
TYT.com/polls/watch party. And then movie night, the movie night watch party on the, I realize you have to do that other poll, is on twitch.tv/TYT this weekend. Exactly. John will keep you up to date on when.
I will, and it'll be a lot of fun. And so that's my garbage person, Brett's garbage person. But what about you, the TDR community? Who do you think was the biggest piece of garbage this week? Well, we put the poll on the community tab, as we always do, and here's how the vote came out. With 8.6 thousand votes, Donald Trump wins with 55% of the vote for everything he said in that Axios interview. Coming in at second at 18% is Mitch McConnell for fighting for corporations over people. Betsy DeVos gets 15% of the vote and a third for not protecting students and teachers. And the Aurora Police Department for terrorizing citizens in that viral video comes up with 12% of the vote. Thank you to everyone who took part. They're all garbage, but Trump, he gets to be put at the top of the can this week. Anyway, Brett, thank you as always. I know that people are going to be able to see you on Happy Half Hour later today, and Craig as well. Should be a lot of fun.
And Common Room tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and then John, you guys can watch John and watch a movie with him on Saturday at 5 p.m. Pacific.
Awesome.
8 p.m. Eastern time. You're going to love it. I'm going to watch. I've only read The Circle.
Yeah, I haven't either. I haven't done either of
them. That's a flex.
If it's that, but that's funny. Anyway, thank you as always, Brett. I'll talk to you soon.
It is continuing to look like at once we hit the election day, the pandemic is probably going to be effectively as disastrous as it is in terms of everyday impact on Americans' lives as it does now. And that means that a lot of Americans are going to be choosing to vote via mail-in ballots. But your ability to do so might in some states end up coming down to your age, a consideration not many people are thinking about. Well, joining us now as a guest is going to break down this current legal battle. The Executive Director and Chief Counsel of Equal Citizens, Jason Harrow, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks, John. It's great to be back.
Glad to have you on. So we spoke in the middle of June, and you explained how some states were prioritizing mail-in ballots for older Americans, and how you were saying that violates some equal protection considerations of access to the vote. I know that we're going to give updates, but just in case people weren't familiar with that first interview, can you quickly explain what the concerns are?
Sure. Well, it's not just equal protection, actually. Equal protection is a broad constitutional principle that means that the government has to treat similarly situated individuals equally broadly. But with respect to a lot of types of factors, the explanation the government gives for treating different people differently just has to be rational. So the question is there more that has to be done for certain types of discrimination. Now, most people know that race is something. You can't just, you know, discriminate between African Americans and Caucasians and say, well, it's rational to do that, or I've got some reason to do it. There's got to be a really, really good, compelling reason to do that. Essentially, the government can never do it because of specific constitutional provisions. Now, the interesting thing is, this is true too with respect to age in voting. And that's because the 26th Amendment, which goes beyond equal protection, says that the government, when it comes to the right to vote for citizens 18 or over, cannot discriminate, deny, or abridge the right to vote specifically, quote, on account of age. So age kind of becomes like race, and it's a no-go for discrimination in voting.
Interesting. And you know, I assume that many people upon hearing about this debate, this consideration, would say that that reason that you earlier alluded to would be that older Americans are at a significantly greater risk of serious complications from COVID-19, including death, which we know statistically is true. But we also know that right now in the debate about sending kids back to school, we're continually reminding people that they can still get the virus and they can still die from the virus and potentially have long-term consequences from it as well. And so sending younger Americans out to potentially get sick or even die seems like a bad idea as well. All people deserve to be protected from the virus.
No question. You know, the issue that every expert has said is not about particular vulnerable populations per se. It's about avoiding large social gatherings for everyone, because that's how it spreads. And then people go back and interact with their parents, with their grandparents, with their teachers, with their colleagues. And that's what we're trying to prevent, right? I don't think anyone is saying that it's just like we have to force younger voters to go to the polls and then let older voters stay home because it's the polls themselves that are just gonna kill people. No, it's waiting in line, it's gathering, it's spreading the disease broadly, and that applies to everyone. So that's point one. And then just the second point that I'll add is that is a little bit, the states that are relying on this to sort of say, let's make it much, much easier for folks 65 and older to vote, that's relying on some outdated CDC guidance. So the medical professionals have updated their guidance and they don't make a particular age distinction anymore and say above this line, it's really risky, below this line, you're pretty good. Instead, the new guidance is the risk increases with age. So 36, more heightened risk than 26, 46 more heightened than 36. There's no border where you're safe or you're not. So everyone has this concern.
So it's been about 6 to 8 weeks since we last spoke. So you mentioned some legal challenges at the state level the last time we spoke. How have those things proceeded since then?
Yeah, so they're moving along. Unfortunately, since we last spoke, there was a challenge in Texas that we spoke a little bit about, because Texas has a really extreme version of this, where everyone 65 and older in Texas doesn't even need an excuse. They can just write to their county and say, I would like to vote by absentee ballot, and they're allowed. And then if you're 64 or younger, they have basically the most onerous mail ballot restrictions in the country, where COVID is not an excuse. And not only that, but it's the most onerous excuse for even being away or working on election day. Because in Texas, and this is pretty extraordinary, not only do you have to say, I'll be away on election day, November 3rd, if you're under 65, but you have to say, I will be away and unable to vote, maybe because I'm working out of the county or something, on every single day of early voting, starting on October 19th. And then they can only mail you a ballot outside the county. So basically, they have to say, prove it. So Texas brought this really good challenge to say, hey, this is a humongous difference between people 65 and 35. There was a dissent from Justice Sotomayor who said, you know, we really should take a closer look at this. And it's still been emergency litigation, so there's no final decision. But right now, those advocates haven't gotten the law changed. We, since we last spoke, filed a case in Alaska because they're doing something a little more subtle, but I think equally impactful, which is they decided to mail absentee ballot applications to every voter 65 and older in Alaska and leave voters younger than 65 sort of out to their own devices to figure out how to get an absentee ballot. So people under 65 in Alaska and many other states can still get a ballot. It's just, it's not being put to them on a platter like it is for older voters. Yeah. And so we challenged that in court, and we're headed for an emergency injunction hearing on August 25th. So we should know in early September whether or not the courts are going to resolve that one and make the state at least send a postcard or send something to everyone else and say, hey, here are your options. Here's what to do, and not just make it so much easier for those 65 and older voters to vote by mail than for younger voters.
So that one conceivably could be changed in time to have an effect on the election.
Could be changed. I'm optimistic about it. The courts candidly are a little more favorable in Alaska. An appeal would go to the Ninth Circuit, which tends to be a little more favorable to voting rights than the appeals courts in Texas. And I also think they tend to be a little more reasonable in Alaska, right? They do have some nice, robust voting options in Alaska, and I think they want to make it easy. They just decided to do this illegal discrimination and you know, make it more difficult for those younger than 65 to figure out how to vote by mail. So our plaintiffs in that case are, you know, folks in the Alaska Native community and folks in the disability community saying, hey, where are we? It's really hard for us to vote too, and you didn't do anything for us. Is it a, you know, coincidence that the people 65 and older in Alaska tend to be whiter, tend to be a little more of one political party or one political persuasion? I don't know if that's only a coincidence or not, but regardless, the state needs to treat everyone equally on the basis of age when it comes to voting.
Now, both in this interview and the last time you were on the Damage Report, we talked about a number of different states. Outside of those states where you've either launched lawsuits or there are still ones pending, they haven't been resolved yet. Have you seen much, like, are there a lot of states that are doing significant changes to make it easier to mail and vote? And if so, are you seeing cases where it is fairly agnostic to age? Like, are there parts of the country where it's going to be easier than in past elections, even if you don't happen to be over 65?
Absolutely. This is the good news. I don't want to come on here and only say bad news. There really is good news, which is that depending on exactly how you interpret certain laws and statutes and what's going to happen over the next weeks, we're looking at probably 40, 41, 42 states where anyone who wants to vote by mail can vote by mail regardless of age. It's really a deep minority. Texas, Louisiana, unfortunately, Mississippi, Kentucky, which we can talk a little bit about, that are putting the thumb on the scale in favor of older voters. There's a couple of in-between states, John. So Tennessee, viewers may have, who follow this thing closely, may have seen a decision from the Tennessee Supreme Court that sort of split the difference on COVID voting by mail and said that anyone at a heightened risk of COVID or who lives with someone with a heightened risk can automatically vote by mail. It didn't define heightened, and it also said it's on the honor system and you don't need a doctor's note. So as I read that, anyone who just wants to prevent COVID and thinks that they have any more than a nominal risk of having severe complications, which I think is everyone, can request an absentee ballot there. So that's why I say it's a little unclear what number to put on, but it's most of the country will be able to vote by mail. And it's important, it'll be important to do that early, right? Because there's going to be a huge flood. So folks who want to do that should go on the relevant websites and start applying as early as you can. Let the mail be as slow as it's going to be, and you know your vote will still count because you're super early.
Yeah, I like that, not defining the heightened risk. I mean, if we're allowed to define it for ourselves, I would say all Americans in comparison to the rest of the world are at a fairly heightened risk. And I'm glad that you point out the states where they're doing the right thing in this area. But I don't want people to get complacent and think, well, you know, we're winning in some philosophical sense. The states that you've pointed out that are not doing the right thing, these are some of the states that in almost every question of access to voting, they're generally historically on the wrong side of things, especially when there's not enough oversight. And so I'm glad that you're helping to provide that and that these lawsuits are happening in some of these states that are already, like Georgia and Texas and Louisiana, they crack down on voting rights in particular partisan and racially biased ways. And that's been true for as long as they've been states. So I'm glad that you're doing that work, and we appreciate you coming back on the show and updating us on the progress.
Of course. Yeah, no, that is an unfortunate reality. And this in many ways goes back to a 2013 decision by the Supreme Court that got rid of the extra protections that people had in those states that historically discriminated in voting. And that's really, if people are looking back and saying, how did we get here? I think a lot of people point to Citizens United in 2010, add in Shelby County in 2013, which would sort of let these rogue states kind of to their own devices.
Yeah. Well, you know, definitely let us know when another one of these big decisions ends up coming through, and we can talk about it on the show.
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Be well.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.